We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, how are we doing? Welcome to the show. A brand new week, a busy week in Omaha, a hot weekend in Omaha, and for the most part, a fun weekend at the College World Series. I'm Sean Stiers. I am back from Omaha on very little sleep.
I was going to say, couldn't have gotten much.
I tell you what, my son and I went out and for our Irish Breakdown readers, people who read the stuff on the website. If you've seen any of the photos on the website from Omaha this weekend, we haven't had a ton, but you know, each story, you know, has had its own photo in there. My son was down on the field or beside the field, you know, in the camera pits and all that stuff, taking photos for us. So that was fun. And then we stayed for the first weekend, came back early this morning. I can't even remember, you know, after the game last night, got all my stuff written up, got back to the hotel, I think somewhere after midnight, and we were up by 4:30 this morning.
Oh my.
To make the 8+ hour drive back home. So, you know, we're both a little wiped out.
But so you weren't just texting me this morning when you left. You had already been on the road for a little while.
Yes. Wow. Yes. And that was 4:30 Central Time, you know, 5:30 okay. Eastern Time.
But still,
yeah, we've been on the road for a little bit.
I think you texted me right around 7. So, yeah, you had already been on the road for a little bit. Wow, holy smokies.
Now, I just saw in our chat on our live YouTube stream that YouTube did not send out. He said, DJ said YouTube didn't give him a notification for this show. So
YouTube needs to step it up, baby.
Wonder what's going on then. I mean, you know, we didn't. I know we had kind of a little internet connection issue. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but the notification should have gone out over an hour ago, I think, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure when he set it up, but yeah, at very least about 45 minutes ago.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of College World Series talk that we're going to get to in today's show. He's Vince D'Addario. I'm Sean Stiers. And, you know, we've got a lot of College World Series talk. Vince and I are going to talk College World Series. And I've got a guest who I Woo-hoo! Saw at the College World Series. He'll be coming up at about a half an hour or so into the show. Ryan Connolly, he used to play for Notre Dame. And he is now on the staff at Kansas State University. So Ryan will be with me as well. And, you know, Notre Dame made its first College World Series appearance in 20 years, won their opener against Texas Friday. Then they lost their second game last night to Oklahoma. They're still alive in the elimination bracket, you know, starting at 2:00 tomorrow afternoon. Auburn, by the way, with a couple other Notre Dame alums at the helm. Alan Green, another former pulmonary Notre Dame player. He's the athletic director there. And a guy named Brant Ust, who also played for pulmonary in the 90s. He is the baseball administrator. So, you know, like an assistant associate athletic director there. So they stayed alive. They beat Stanford in the other pool's elimination game. So, you know, they are still kind of alive and kicking there in Omaha in the other pools.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So Vince, I guess, you know, let's just kind of start things off. It was a very uncharacteristic game for Notre Dame last night. 14 strikeouts by the Fighting Irish. That was kind of the big one.
That's absolutely the big one, because if anybody has been paying attention to the way Notre Dame has won games in the postseason, it has been with their offense. And it's not like Tennessee where it was home runs and all that. Now, they hit home runs when they needed them. And, you know, they came up big with home runs at times. But their biggest thing was they just were not striking out. I mean, they were putting the ball in play. They were making the defense make plays on them. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, they had 7 strikeouts against Texas, but then 14 against Oklahoma. You can't strike out 14 times and expect to really do anything constructive offensively. Yeah. And they had one big hit, and it was a home run, and that was a 2-run shot. And that's how they got their 2 runs. And at the time, you're okay, it was 5-0. Then it was 5-2. You're like, okay, maybe the bats are going to start to get a little bit hotter. I believe that home run was hitting like the 6th inning, so you still had a little bit of time. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. I'm going by memory here, Sean. But it was towards the latter half of the game when they hit that 2-run shot. It was like, okay, maybe the offense is going to get flowing here. I mean, they did have 7 hits, but they gave up 12 to Oklahoma. And the 7 hits just were not – they just weren't damaging hits. They weren't timely hits. They left 5 or 8 men on base. I mean, you can't leave 8 men on base and still be effective offensively. And what got them to where they are was offense, small ball, being aggressive on the base paths. And that, I mean, none of that was evident in the game yesterday against Oklahoma. And it's unfortunate because it just wasn't the Notre Dame team that we have come to see. You know what I mean? I mean, they rolled through the pitching staff. I mean, they just did not have a great outing by the pitching staff. I will give them some props in that Oklahoma left 12 on base. So, I mean, Notre Dame did get themselves out of some jams here and there, especially early on before the scoring started. So you're thinking, okay, they're holding on. They just need to get this offense going. It just never really happened. So the positive that you can take away, I saw somebody in the chat say, was there anything positive that you can take away from this game? And to me, it was the fact that they prevented Oklahoma from getting everybody in that was on base. 12 men left on base, that's a big number. And normally you don't win a lot of ball games if you're leaving 12 men on base, but they got enough in and they got the timely hits that Notre Dame just didn't get.
Yeah, you know, they Oklahoma offensively basically was what we saw from Notre Dame against, you know, Texas in the Friday opener. doing things on the bases, dropping down the bunt, you know, doing little things, being aggressive, all that different stuff. And that's really what Notre Dame has been this season. And I asked Link Jarrett after the game, I said, you know, because he was kind of talking about the things that Oklahoma was doing. And I said, and I asked him, aren't you essentially, was it like sort of looking in a mirror, seeing what Oklahoma was doing? Because those are the things that, you do. Yeah. And he's like, absolutely. And, you know, again, it goes back to the 14 strikeouts being the reason why they weren't able to get anything going offensively, because their offense, again, like if you watched them Friday, and I realize that not everyone has, you know, watched this team throughout the season, but if you've watched them in this tournament, specifically if you watched them Friday against Texas in that College World Series opener, that's the thing they do. It's, you know, like they're not a home run reliant team. And I wrote the story about it last week about the fact that this is a big ballpark. What you need to do in this ballpark is just put the ball in play, hard contact, do things, get runners on, move them around. That's what they did against Texas. When you strike out 14 times, you're not able to do those things. And like, right. You know, there was a ball, I think, that Ryan Cole just stung to right center field. And again, big alleys at this ballpark, and they've been talking about it through the weekend. You can't hit the ball to the big part of the park right now, you know, without the help of the wind and get it out. You're going to get home runs in the bullpens. And that's where, you know, two of the three home runs that Notre Dame got, they did get the one out late in the game against Texas, you know, kind of more to right center field, but you're not going to get too many of those out very often if you don't have a pretty good win behind it. And again, that's what we saw. And, you know, from the Oklahoma point of view, Cade Horton is the reason why, you know, for all these strikeouts. And he's an interesting story. And I'm not sure, like, what they talked about on TV or not, you know, being in the press box and all that. But kind of the backstory with this guy, Horton goes six innings last night. He strikes out a career high 11 before, you know, the bullpen got the last three. This is a guy, he was recruited to play quarterback and committed to Ole Miss to play quarterback. And then Oklahoma comes in, and they're going to let him do both, kind of like Kyler Murray did, you know, quarterback and baseball. Well, the guy ends up needing Tommy John surgery on his elbow, so he has Tommy John. He starts the season in the bullpen, and that slider that he got all the strikeouts with, that wipeout slider, he didn't even develop that pitch until, like, midway through the season. So, like, this has just been coming on for this guy. His last four starts, 23 innings. He's given up 8 total runs in his last four starts, 37 strikeouts, just 6 walks. And again, he learned that slider in the middle of the season, and it was just filthy last night. Every at-bat almost was like a carbon copy of the last. You know, Notre Dame really had a hard time laying off. And I mean, you could see it with those 11 strikeouts that he had.
Well, and I will also say that one of the things about Notre Dame that we loved, that you and I both talked about last week in the last week's shows, is just how prepared they looked offensively and just how in control they looked of the moment and all of those different things. And I'm not saying anything against Notre Dame in a like that they weren't prepared for this game or whatever.
Right. But
because of the pitching, because of this kid, they looked like they were unprepared. They just looked like they were grasping at straws up at the plate. And they were flailing and they were going after that slider, and they had some ugly looking swings throughout the game, and it looked like they were unprepared. And I know that's not the case. That's not a Link Jarrett coach team, and it never will be, but that's the way it appeared. If you just came in from outer space and you decided, I'm going to watch college baseball, and I'm going to watch Notre Dame versus Oklahoma, that's what you would think. Like, wow, they didn't even crack a book about Oklahoma or anything about them. They're just going up there swinging for the fences and trying, you know. They didn't look good. They just did not look good. Now, it's baseball. It could be a one-off. It could just be a bad day offensively. That happens in baseball. That's why they play 162 major league games. But the problem is you only get 2 bad days in the College World Series.
That's it.
Then you got to go home. So
that's it.
Notre Dame got their one, and now they have to play 3 consecutive elimination games if they continue to win. And that's going to be a tall, tall task. And that's just to get to the series, to the final series. You got to win 3.
We're going to talk about that road here in just a second. I just, you know, did want to mention Carter Putz, a 4-for-4 night last night, and then LaManna hit the home run. Really, you know, so those two guys combined to go 5-for-8 again with Putz with 4 of the hits. They were 5-for-8, the rest of the team 3-for-26. And yeah, I mean, just like we talked about, and, you know, some of our listeners and viewers have said, you know, you do have less of a scouting report on you this do. Guy because true. Of the fact that, you know, again, this specific pitch, that slider, but I mean, he had nice velocity as well, depending on which radar gun you were looking at, 96, 97 miles an hour, pretty consistently, you know, 95 sure. almost. But then the thing is, you know, then he could drop down, you know, 80 miles an hour on the change and that, and then that slider as well. You know, it was just a really tough combination for them. So, you know, they do have a tough road ahead, you know, and then on the other side, by the way, a little side note on this, Peyton Graham, the freshman shortstop for Oklahoma, 20 home runs this season. He had 4 hits last night and 2 stolen bases. He has 34 stolen bases this season, 20 home runs this season, you know, so a 20-30 guy. He's the first player since Barry Bonds for Arizona State in the early 80s with 4 hits and 2 stolen bases in a College World Series game. That's some pretty select company when you're talking about young Barry Bonds at Arizona State.
Yeah, young Barry Bonds was an unbelievable player. He was a five-tool player, as they say, and there's no question about that. So if you're lumping him in with the young Barry Bonds, that's a good thing for yeah. sure. Yeah, yep. it was just there were at points it was hard to watch, obviously, if you're a Notre Dame fan. And there are, again, I will say there are positives to take away from this game. Look, Notre Dame is incredibly deep with their pitching staff, okay? And if you've got to win a bunch of games in a row here to get back to where you need to be, having a deep pitching staff is going to benefit you. I mean, they ran out, what, 7 pitchers last night, Sean? And only 3 of the runs that were given up were earned. Okay? Right. That's an anomaly for Notre Dame defensively as well, is giving up unearned runs. Okay? So the pitching staff didn't do a terrible job. Yes, they gave up too many hits. Yes, I believe that they gave up too many walks. They had 6 walks. That's too many. In my opinion, that's too many walks. And you can't give up 12 hits. But they only gave up 3 earned runs. So that's something that you can take away as a positive. You've got a deep staff. You've got guys that throw strikes. You've got a chance to do what many are going to say is the impossible with what they have laid out in front of them. They have an opportunity. They have a chance.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, again, it's a tall task. Now, Notre Dame won its first game and then lost its second. And from a games you've got to win to get to the championship series, it actually doesn't matter if you lose your first game or your second, you know, as if you win one of those games, you know, sure. you can go 1-0 or 0-1 as long as you win one of those first two. You know, the biggest difference is if you lose your first one, obviously, it's an elimination game the rest of the way.
The pressure's different.
But you still have to win 4 games if you lose one of those first two to get into the championship series. So, you know, again, Notre Dame went 1-0. There are 4 teams all time that have lost their first game and gone on to win national championships. Oregon State actually did it a couple of times. Yeah, so, okay. but as you have alluded to, you've got to win 3 in a row now. I wanted to get, before we get specifically to that and to sure. Texas A&M, the squeeze bunt last night, you know, again, that was a big difference in the game. And sure. just, you know, again, what Link Jarrett talked about, doing stuff that Notre Dame did. We saw Notre Dame Friday against Texas drop down the squeeze bunt, get a run home. They've got runners at the corners. Wallace Clark drops down the bunt in the 5th. First baseman Carter Putz picks it up, throws to first, and unfortunately it ends up going up the line. And again, that's an uncharacteristic miscue by a really good Notre Dame defense. But it, you know, led to, they were going to get 1 run anyway, most sure. likely. But obviously, it led to an extra run. You know, the best thing we saw from the defense actually last night was the relays from the outfield, the play down in left field. You know, nice relay.
Play get it? Third.
You know, he was going for third. You know, they get him out there, and then of course that shot to right center field. So it's early in the 4th inning, runner at first, John Spikerman. And Peyton Graham rips that oppo single into kind of right center field there. Spikerman decides to try for third base. So here's Brooks Coetzee. You know, the throw beats him by at least 6 feet. And here's Spikerman with that head first dive. And again, it looks like, okay, it's going to be an easy play. Well, the ball comes loose. And when the ball came loose initially, I did not see what exactly happened. I just kind of thought it bounced off the bag. Well, obviously, it bounced off the third base coach. And I was sitting there wondering, shouldn't that be, you know, like interference on the third base coach? Because like if you're Basically, the rule is if a coach interferes with the ball, then it would have been an out, or it would have been an out. It would have been interference on him, and the runner would have been safe. But since it was like an inadvertent contact, like it was right there, that's why it ended up being what it was. Spikerman had no idea. He thought he was out, and he's just kind of standing there going, how was I out? And then the next thing you know, he actually is out because Jack Brannigan picks up the ball because it bounced off the third base coach, and Brannigan was able to scoop it up and tag him out without him even really knowing what was going on.
To go back to the squeeze bunt situation, absolutely love that call from an offensive standpoint. Trying to hold back a sneeze here, but I love the squeeze bunt, making the defense make a play.
Me too.
You know, and especially in the College World Series, you have an opportunity to get a run on the board. You never know how important that run's going to be, right? And that run was going to score regardless because of that bunt. I love that play. That's why, and I'm sure you did the same thing, everybody in my lineup at the high school level knows how to bunt. We practice it every single day. Everybody needs to know how to bunt, because you never know when you're going to get that opportunity to lay down a squeeze or what the situation's going to be. Put that baby in play and let's see what happens. Force the other team to make a play.
Yep.
Most of the plays are routine, but you'd be surprised how many of those routine plays just aren't made, even in the College World Series. So I love that call. It was the right call because they would have scored. It was an even better call because Notre Dame muffed it and they threw the ball into right field. And again, you're forcing them to make a play. I love it. I absolutely love it. Even though it hurt Notre Dame, Notre Dame makes that call in the same situation. And yeah, I love you know, it then too. So,
and that's part of why you see more bunting at the college level than you see, you know, because at the major league level, by the time those guys get there, even though obviously you have defenders of varying degrees, sure, you're still talking about professional defensive players. You've got varying degrees of defenders in college, and make the defense make a play. Like when Palmieri was at Notre Dame, they bunted quite a bit and put the ball in play, make the defense make plays, all that. And they're also their philosophy when they were on defense receiving a bunt, it was never get the lead runner. It was throw the ball first, get the out, make sure you make the fundamental play, you know, that. And, you know, that's what Notre Dame tried last night. Just unfortunately, absolutely, they weren't quite able, you know, to get together on that. Ryan Connolly, again, former Notre Dame player, he's going to be joining us here in a few minutes. I just got a text from him, so he's going to be joining in a few. But it is do or die for Notre Dame right now. And again, they've got to win three elimination games in three consecutive days. And the big so a couple things about tomorrow. Texas A&M, 2:00. If you haven't been watching the College World Series so far, there have been two games that have gone 4 hours in this College World Series. And guess who was involved in both of them?
Notre Dame.
Texas A&M.
Oh, Texas A&M. Yes. I didn't think the Notre Dame games were that long, but
no. Texas A&M. Oh, we've got.
I got it.
Fun Time Girls trying to join in the.
There we go.
The chat on YouTube. They want to. Jim Schlossnagel, longtime TCU coach, is the head coach in his first season at Texas A&M, and nobody really expected them to get to the College World Series this year, but here they are. He got TCU to the College World Series 5 times. Including 4 straight from 2014 to 2017. Their basic approach at the plate is just grind it out. They're gonna take strikes. They're gonna take a lot of pitches. They want to work walks.
Sure.
And that's why you see the high pitch counts. Like I think yesterday, the total that they had against Texas, the total pitches that Texas had to throw in that game was just shy of 200. And you know, so that's a 9-inning game. A pitching staff has to throw 200 pitches. So that's kind of what Texas A&M wants you to do. You know, so that's what Notre Dame is going to have to combat tomorrow. You know,
see, really I think that benefits Notre Dame though, don't you? I mean, they've got such a deep staff.
If you can throw strikes early in the count, that's what benefits Notre Dame. And that's the biggest question now for the Fighting Irish. What are they going to do from the pitching standpoint? Yep. Because here's what happens now when you're in these elimination situations. Because again, you've got to win tomorrow to get to the next day, but you've got to win three games in a row to get to the championship series. Like, so they've got to beat Texas A&M tomorrow, and then they would have to beat Oklahoma twice. You know, Oklahoma's going to be sitting there regardless, you know, so that's going to kind of be where they are. And like, go back to the 2010 College World Series, for example. There's this guy, he was a lefty from South Carolina named Michael Roth, and he was this lefty. They barely used, you know, not barely, they used him a lot out of the bullpen, but he was basically like a lefty specialist. So South Carolina finds themselves in the exact situation as Notre Dame. They've got to win all these elimination games. So here comes Michael Roth. They decide against Clemson in their last elimination game. They're going to start Michael Roth, guy who'd never started a game before. And what's he do? He goes out and throws a three-hit complete game. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to get through this, you don't necessarily have to be Michael Roth and throw a three-hit complete game. You're going to have to get somebody, though, to kind of come out of nowhere and overperform and do something that you really weren't that you probably haven't seen them do all year. You know, like back when Paul Maneri was at Notre Dame, I think it was 2003, similar situation. Matt Laird pretty much had been a reliever, you know, for most of his life. They're in the Big East championship game now. And you need somebody to step up. Matt Laird gave him a complete game, and they won the Big East championship. You know, so you're going to need that kind of thing. My question is, do you start Jack Findlay, the guy who was so good, the freshman All-American lefty, so good in relief against Tennessee in the Super Regional? Do you start Findlay, or do you, you know, do you push him to the bullpen like they did last week? What do you think, Vince?
You know, that's a really good question. Finley's been your best arm out of the bullpen. They didn't go to him yesterday, I don't believe, out of the seven
guys. No, they did not. And they had him up. They had him up early.
They had him up in the first inning.
But they ended up going to Tyrell instead. Yeah.
Yeah, they had him up in the first inning, and they decided not to go with him, and which surprised me a little bit, but okay. I mean, that's fine. I've trusted, you know, Link Jarrett up to this point and his whole staff. They know what they're doing with the pitching staff, but I think that there's merit to starting Findlay. He's been your most consistent guy. It's almost like he's too young to even know what's going on out there. He's just going out there and throwing his stuff and doing his thing. And in an elimination game like that with, you know, 17 seventh-year seniors behind him or whatever, you know, I'm obviously exaggerating, but they've got a ton of seniors. They got a lot of leadership out there. He just needs to just go out there and do his thing. I think there's a lot of merit to starting him tomorrow. See where he can go. The devil's advocate side of that is, okay, well, if he goes out there and he throws four or five innings, obviously you burned him for the next game. You burned your best arm out of the bullpen for the next game. But
again, if you don't, you know, you're going to have to burn somebody because,
because, you know, I get that.
Because your options are, you know, like they started Liam Simon last week and then Findlay comes in relief because, you know, because it ends up being a short start for Simon. You had another short start last night. I mean, so you've got arms available. You know, again, it's like you can't pitch based on, well, I want to have this guy in 2 days every day now because it's an elimination game.
You can't think, and that was
you've got to get through today, and then you think about tomorrow when it gets there.
That was going to be my exact point. You have to win tomorrow in order to play any other games anyway. He'll get 8 months of rest. He'll be okay, you know, but you have to play to win, and that's exactly what I would do.
Before we bring our guest in, Ryan Conley, who knows a lot more about, you know, all this than either one of us knuckleheads, we got a question from K-Mac. He said, sorry, late to the show. What is Notre Dame baseball playing for at this point? I'm new to following postseason college baseball. My bad if you've covered it already. And, you know, it's a perfectly legit question because I think there are a lot of people who kind of have that same question because they don't follow it also. You know, again, they're in the elimination bracket now, but if they can win, they have to win three games in 3 days. If they can win those three games, they'll be in the College World Series championship series this weekend, which gives them they're playing for a national championship at that point. So they're still in that conversation. You've just got to win a few games. So
pressure's heightened just a little bit.
That's right. With that, there's Ryan Conley. How you doing, Ryan?
Shawnee, what's up, man? How are you? Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you great. Can you hear us all right?
Awesome. Vince, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Pleasant surprise seeing a name come through this morning.
That's right. So Ryan, again, he played for Notre Dame, freshman in 2006, correct? We were talking about this the other night. Freshman in 2006, graduated in 2009 from Notre Dame, and he has worked in the college baseball world for a long time. He's had stops at Virginia Tech, at Oklahoma. He is now the director of baseball operations at Kansas State University, where Pete Hughes is the head coach, you know, a guy that we used to see back in those old Big East days at Boston College when, you know, again, back in the pulmonary days. But, you know, saw you this week. It was really cool, first of all, Ryan, to see. And I talked to Chuck Riston. We all, after the win over Texas, a lot of people went over to the team hotel, which was right across the street from Charles Schwab Stadium. Walk in the lobby, and there's, you know, like a bar, and there's just people everywhere, you know, most of them wearing green and blue and gold and everything else. And there were just a lot of former Notre Dame players there, you know, from spanning all eras. And I talked with Chuck Restano, the pitching coach, real quick. And he thought, you know, just said how cool it was to see this team in the College World Series, but so many guys from so many different eras of Notre Dame baseball there. What did you think of all that?
It was a pretty awesome 36 hours, man. You know, and I haven't worn the monogram like that in a while, you know, and not that it ever comes off, but in my line of work, you got to be emotionally invested in who's paying your bills, you know.
That's exactly right.
I think the last big event I was at was I was at Virginia Tech, and football came out and played. I was at 15 maybe or something like that. And
sounds right.
Something that I know the stadium was still under construction, so it's been a little while. And I wore black, you know. I think I had green underneath, but I wore black, you know. And there was plenty of Hokies, but you know, to be there this weekend and to be fully, man, back in the mix with the ND family, and to see, you know, I think there was players there from 95, you know, Coach Maneri's one of his first teams, to guys that were younger that I didn't even play with were back there to support. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And again, you know, again, like just to see the interaction with, you know, whether it was 95 guys or, you know, the 2002 guys or the 2004, and like, you know, you and Ross Brzozowski and Javi Sanchez all got an Airbnb together, you know, and it's like, again, kind of an intersection, you know, of guys from some different eras, but, you know, everyone over there hanging out. It was just really cool to see all you guys all together and all supporting the team like that. You know, what's it mean to you? You know, you were talking about, your main obligation is to who's paying the bills, but as a Notre Dame alum and a guy who's played in this program, what's it mean to you to see this team out there in Omaha right now?
It's pretty special, man. You know, I honestly got in the profession because I wanted to be a part of it, you know, and getting it back to this place. And I still, to this day, probably the best team I've ever been a part of was my freshman year. You know, the team won, I think, 23 games in a row, Paul's right, last year. And it was a senior laden team, crazy similarities, very veteran, mature, fundamentally sound, been through the fire. That group was, it also had, I think, four or five big leaguers on it, which helped. But that team was
always true.
That team was special. You know, we fell off a little bit, and to see it all come kind of full circle back, really proud. I remember texting Chuck the night, you know, Sunday after beating Tennessee, and just said, just proud, man. Like, we are just so proud. And our group, there's a group text, there's probably 8 or 9 of us in it. It's active every day, you know, and rarely does it ever talk about baseball. And that's all we've talked about in the last 10 days. And it's been pretty cool.
Ryan, I know you were kind of in the green room when we were talking about the possibility of Jack Finley coming as a true freshman and starting, you know, the elimination game tomorrow, and being surrounded by all those seniors and the graduates for that matter. You were a freshman on a very senior laden team. Can you just kind of, from a freshman's perspective, you know, what that was like, knowing, yeah, I got a bunch of guys, you know, that got my back that have been doing this for a while?
Sure. I mean, for me, a little different than Jack. I wasn't getting ready to pitch in the World Series and getting these, you know, the last three outs of a game. I was broke, man. I had surgery that year and redshirted. But when you're around a team where the culture is so strong, no one feels like a freshman. You know what I mean? That's a sign of a good culture. We're all in the same fight together, right? Our goals are the same. And, you know, whether it's, you know, getting the big at bat or getting the last three outs, they're all important no matter where who they come from, right? And the leadership on that team that I was on was tremendous. And the leadership on this team is pretty evident, you know? Yeah. And Jack's got some stone-clad cojones, man. I don't know how PG this goes, but I mean, there is zero fear whatsoever, man. So you would never know that kid's a freshman on the mound.
No kidding. Well, and you were kind of, you know, sitting in the waiting room, so to speak, you know, waiting to come on when Vince and I were talking about. So what do you do? You know, what do you think about, like, you know, not specifically to Findlay, but you know, we were talking, you got to do what's best to get you through day one before you can think about day three. I mean, do you kind of agree with what we were talking about there?
That's the tough part of getting in this side of the bracket, you know. It's so important. One, to win game one. Javi and Ross, I were talking about, hey, Texas, that was the national championship game, honestly, because winning that first one and getting a jump start into the winner's side is huge. Now you're on the other side. You figure out tomorrow, you know, win tomorrow, and then you figure out what you got the next day. You can't save bullets, you know. We were going back and forth, you know, yesterday during the game is, all right, do you bring Finley in? Do you not bring him in? We were down four at the time. And, you know, I know a little bit about the team they were playing, and we are still in that game.
Yeah.
We were a couple of barrels away from kind of a little chink in the arm in that bullpen, and it could have taken off, but we just couldn't get anything going really offensively. So, okay, hold on to Finley because you're going to have to win some baseball games, you know, ahead of you. And now I think you go all in tomorrow, and then you figure out the next day when we get there. So,
well, and like you said, you're familiar, you're in the Big 12 at Kansas State with Texas and Oklahoma. And I think you guys went 3-3 against those two teams this season, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, you know, so, I mean, you guys have seen them. This Oklahoma team is what we saw last night. Is that pretty much a consistent reputation of what you guys, and I know they're different this year than last year. Like, they didn't steal many bases last year. I think it took them like 16 games or something like that to get to the stolen base total they had last year. They run crazy, don't they?
That's definitely a different look, especially offensively. To win this thing, you either uber talented above everybody else, or you're getting hot at the right time. And I don't know, you know, with Tennessee not being in it because they were uber talented, I don't know that any team really jumps out that they're way more talented in any aspect of the game than anyone else. Right. But you have a couple of teams that are just hot as a firecracker right now. And OU's one of them. They're confident, they're feeling themselves, and they're dangerous when they're going offensively because they run so much. The second they get to first base, you're going to get more fastballs, you know. You're going to get guys trying to be quick to the plate, slide step. You're getting advantage counts, at least to offense. You know, and Arkansas is another team, too, that kind of didn't have a very Arkansas-esque year, but had to go on the road for the first time, do it the hard way. But they're getting hot, man, at the right time, and they could be pretty dangerous in this thing. So, but, yeah, that Oklahoma team is – I don't know they were quite that, even when we got them. But they're definitely different, and they haven't slowed down. They haven't slowed down. They're on fire right now. That's a good team.
They're hot.
That's a good team. You know, and Horton last night too. That's a kid coming off TJ. You know, what, it's 16 months in now. When we got him, he started game two against us, but really as like an opener, and it was limited. You know, so they were just starting to get him stretched out. So for him to, again, the group text was going, I'm like, it's going to fizzle out by the third. It has to, almost. Right. You know, you're kind of expecting it to do that. You're
hoping so it for would. Him
to, you're right, exactly. But for him to hold on to that velo and his stuff and have the feel of his breaking ball like he did was, I mean, you do want to, hey, tip your cap, right? It was a pretty special outing by that kid last night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So on him, we were talking about that slider. Everyone in Omaha is talking about the fact that this is a guy who has really just, it sounds like, been, he kind of found that slider late in the season. You know, like it sounded like it was in May even at some point. Yeah. That he, how different does he look, you know, right now, especially with that slider that he used so well last night against the Irish?
Yeah, if I remember right, it was really more just kind of, hey, I'm going to come at you with velocity and more the breaking ball. And, you know, those guys with the true breaking ball can struggle with strikes. That's a tougher pitch to land. So I think having that slider just kind of complements something he could spin in the zone more consistently. And a lot of, you know, saying the 16 months post TJ, for a guy to have that kind of feel of his spin and landing it for strikes is really impressive. And then he did it, you know, in front of 30,000 people in Omaha, too, at the same time, from a kid who's – he's a freshman from an experience standpoint. So, yeah, he was a little different dude last night, for sure.
Here's what I want to know. In this group text that you former players have going on, who's the one who's, like, always – like, who's the loudest in the group text? Of that group, it's
Sam Elam. I don't even think it's close. That's a blast from the past for you, Shiny.
Yeah, that's right. Old lefty.
Yeah, Sam is definitely. Sam's got what, four girls now? Three girls, four girls. So whenever he can break away and get a little conversation in with the guys, he's doing it. So he's usually leading the charge in the group text.
Ryan, I'll throw a question to you from our chat here from one of our viewers. What adjustments do you think Notre Dame can make now to Texas A&M, different opponent, but what potential adjustments do you think that they can make to get through an elimination game Tuesday?
You don't. There's no adjustments. That team is so veteran and experienced and tough. We ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw last night. We got to play a little cleaner. You know, we threw the ball around there and went the third inning, and that cost us a little bit momentum more than anything. But I don't think we're way too late in this thing. You gotta lean on your foundation and trust who you are, you know, and to think we're going to flip something and create some magic. Well, that's not it. Just you stick to who you are and you play clean defense. And you'll be in good shape.
Let me ask you this, because it was uncharacteristic for Notre Dame to strike out 14 times. And we're sitting here and you know, we're praising Cade Horton. But again, you know, this is a guy that slider has been, you know, again, something that has been developing as the season has come along. And one thing about this coaching staff that we've talked about before is the preparation they're able to do and some of the advanced scouting and stuff like they're able to do against these opponents. How much maybe could that have factored in to the night that Notre Dame had? Just that there wasn't, you know, a whole lot of familiarity maybe with what this guy was really going to bring to the table last night.
Sure. I mean, 100%. I can tell you, we go into games and the hitters will get – they'll get ticked off at you, but we're going to give them the plan. Hey, this is what our eyes tell us on film. This is what we've gathered. And, hey, he only lands his breaking ball statistically 30% of the time. So we're X-ing that thing out. Well, guess what? Sorry. Tonight, boys, he had it. What are we going to do? You know, and you hope to make maybe some in-game adjustments and not let that, you know, string together 4 or 5 innings of unproductivity. But sometimes it's just not your night. And last night wasn't our night. We got beat last night, you know, for one of the first times in a while. So.
And if you can't tell by listening to Ryan, he, you know, he went to Notre Dame, but he's a New York State native. You can hear a little of that New York, you know, he's lived in the Midwest for a while now, but you can hear a little of that Midwest in his voice, or not the New York in his voice. That kind of struck me the other night. But so they're 2-0, or not, they're not 2-0. Oklahoma is 2-0, and you know, and that's the most important thing, because now you're in the driver's seat as that 2-0 team. They don't have to play until Wednesday, and kind of when you look at where they are, how much do you think that helps them in terms of their pitching depth and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, it's huge. Yeah. I thinking about it last night. Okay. When do you bring Jake Bennett back? You know, does he throw Wednesday? Does he throw Thursday? Or do you, can you get by and, you know, be able to have him still throw game one of the final? Maybe you have a little more leeway in the winter side to make decisions like that versus Notre Dame, who we're just saying, you got to use Finley at some point early. Like you got to win today to get to tomorrow. They're not necessarily with their backs against the wall. So, I mean, they're going to be fully charged. That's the beauty of being on that side. And you're going to give Trevin Michael another 2 days. You know, he threw a lot in the last three, through two innings. We're two and a third or two innings, that I think, last night to get that save. So you give him 2 days rest. They'll be fully charged up and dangerous for whoever they have to play. I think a big thing, at least in game one, will be, do you see Jake Bennett, you know, start that thing? And he's a real deal. That's a true ace right there. So.
Yep. Absolutely. And well, you know, and then the other thing is, would they consider bringing back Horton even on Thursday, potentially, or, you know, would they, you know, because again, and we were talking about that on the drive home, you know, here's a guy who is coming off Tommy John and a, you know, potential first round draft pick, you know, so I would think that some of that has to weigh into the decision as well. You know, if you're even going to consider that, you know, maybe you see him for a couple innings, I get, you know, cause like there's a bullpen that he would have somewhere in there, but Notre Dame or whoever is going to have to force that before that even happens, I guess.
Yeah. I'd be stunned if you see Horton, you know, before the weekend, just because of his background. I mean, that'd be scary to see him out there and, you know, 100 pitches, you know, and I doubt you'd see him. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Bennett on certainly one of those 2 days. You probably have to see him on one of those 2 days. But their bullpen, I don't know that's the strength, you know, of the team necessarily. Michael's been hot. He's throwing the ball really well a year, but you get past that front line and you got to get him out of the game though, in the fourth or fifth. You can't let him hang around to the sixth, seventh inning and let him get to Michael.
Well, I know you guys didn't see Texas A&M this year. Interestingly, you guys played Auburn early in the season and they just stayed alive today. But Texas A&M is Notre Dame's opponent. You've seen Jim Schlossnagel enough because he was at TCU in the Big 12, you know, where you guys were for a long time. They always had really good pitching at TCU. You know, they had some good offense too, but it seemed like the pitching was really what carried them. I mean, they really just with all the, you know, we were just, again, talking before you came on about Texas. There have been 2 4-hour games so far in the first weekend. Texas A&M played in both of them. They're taking a lot of pitches, just grinding out these at-bats. Is that kind of what you saw from Schlossnagel teams when he was at TCU as well?
Yeah, it's painful sometimes, honestly, because they don't swing. And when they get to first base, I haven't studied A&M a ton this year. It seems like they slug it a little bit more, but, you know, the TCU teams, those guys are dangerous when they get to first base. Kind of like Oklahoma, they're very good on the bases. They know what they're doing as far as stealing bags. They want to go, go, go. And it forces you to pay attention and throw more fastballs. And, well, that ensues leads to, you know, more home run numbers and slugging numbers going up, which I feel like is what we've seen more from A&M this year. That's a team that they hit it right in the portal, man. When they first got there, they had some transfers and they didn't miss. They got some good ones and they all been pretty productive for them. That's a team, though, that you kind of wonder – have they reached that point in their pitching though, that we maybe kind of take a little bit of an advantage, you know,
right?
4-hour games, you're using arms, you know, they've given up the runs too, to get to this.
There's point. A lot of heat, you know, it's been really hot and muggy so far in Omaha. Yep. And that takes its toll on pitching, you know, if you're throwing all those pitches.
No doubt. So I like our matchup. I really do. You watch the regional, you know, the weather kind of screwed us game one and we got rid of Bertrand early and then had to win that game pretty much. I mean, matching up the entire way. And I remember thinking, holy smokes, we are deep, you know, in the bullpen and guys with some stuff, guys that throwing off strikes. So I like where we're at, honestly, you know, and as far as matching up for the next 2 days, you're trying to get back in into at least a, you know, winner take all to head to the final, right?
Sure.
Ryan, if you're putting together the game plan for tomorrow from a pitching staff standpoint, you just said, you know, A&M, they want to look at a lot of pitches. They want to get you deep into your counts, you know, that kind of thing. What are you instructing your staff to do against this A&M team?
Strikes, make them hit their way on. I mean, honestly, right. Make them hit their way on. You got to get strike one, which I felt like you were going to ask. You're taking that question towards, okay, do we start Finley or not? You know,
yeah, right? Yeah,
that's my next.
All that
question
shit does is fill it up. And you know, he fills it up, and
yeah.
I think my only question with that is just how much length are you going to get out of him? You know, I don't know. I don't know him enough. You know. To say, okay, yeah, he's built up to go five. You know, do we need him to go five? Or do you just start somebody, whoever that third starter would be?
And well, he was starting some midweek games, you know, and then kind of when the postseason got here, you know, more bullpen so far. So he has started a few games, you know, this season.
Yeah.
I agree. I think
he's a strike throwing machine.
That's it. If you've got a team that wants to stand there and take a bunch of pitches and you know, let you help them put them on base. I think throw the guy out there, you know, is going to pound the strike zone early on. And, you know, hopefully you get a lead out of that. And then again, you piece it together after that, I think, but.
Correct. I mean, you look at A&M's numbers a little bit. I was pulled them up before we jumped on and you know, the first two guys that have started for him, Dallas and I think Detmer, maybe those guys have thrown the ball pretty well. And then Palish out of the pen. And I think he's one of the guys that's after that, it does kind of fall off a little bit, you know? So again, we're pretty veteran offense and that park too, you know, A&M has slugged it pretty well. That park is not built for a team to hit home runs, you know? I feel like our veteran lineup is pretty disciplined to be able to go out and what we did against Texas.
Right.
You know, two solo home runs, sure, but we banged out with 11, 12 hits that night, you know, and to win that game. So that's probably what it's going to take.
And that seems like the big thing is just get back to being that team. You know, if they're able to kind of flip back, look more like Oklahoma looked last night, which they typically do, they look like that. I think they've got a chance to beat anybody. And put together three straight wins. Nope. So,
no doubt, we'll be rooting for him. That's for sure.
That's right. David Solomon in our chat said Oklahoma's lineup dominated by freshmen and sophomores, and their window of opportunity for the next few years could be scary. And that's absolutely right. You know, like that shortstop Peyton Graham is probably, you know, he's going to be one of those first round picks. He's only a freshman. He'll be a first round pick, I'm sure. When he's a junior, they'll probably be talking about whether or not he's the first overall pick and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, for sure. But so tomorrow on Tuesday, it is Notre Dame and Texas A&M. That game will be at 2:00 Eastern time. And obviously this show goes live at 6:00. And so, you know, again, if Texas A&M script goes as planned, it'll be a 4-hour game. And it'll be wrapping up about the time that we're starting the show up. But, you know, we'll come in and we'll have instant analysis from the Tuesday Notre Dame Texas A&M game, and then hopefully they are able to keep alive the rest of the week. If they win Tuesday, they'll play at the same time Wednesday. And I haven't looked at Thursday yet, you know. But again, they've got to get
one game at a time, baby. One game at a time.
That's right. Well, thanks as always, Vince. Thanks to Ryan Connolly as well, even though he couldn't hear me at the end of my microphone issues, but. That's going to do it for tonight. Again, fun weekend. It's always, you know, it's just awesome to have Notre Dame baseball to talk about.
Yes,
it
is. At
this time of year in the College World Series.
Get to pull out the Notre Dame baseball t-shirt from way back when.
Yeah, like,
baby.
I don't even know if you could see it. I got, you know what, my College World Series t-shirts on today from the weekend. So, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It was, again, cool to see so many former Notre Dame players out there supporting this current team. It was really
so cool
to see that. Yep. And again, good luck as well to Auburn in the other pool led by two former Notre Dame baseball players on the administrative side. Alan Green is the athletic director at Auburn.
My son Jesse is going to have a story about meeting the Auburn athletic director, Alan Green, after Friday's game. That'll be on Wednesday's show. But Brant Ust, a guy who I believe had the career home run record at Notre Dame prior to Nico Cavadas breaking it last year. Brant Ust is the baseball administrator for that Auburn team as well. So a couple of former Notre Dame guys down there with Auburn in their run of the College World Series as well. So there's a lot of Notre Dame flavor in the College World Series.
Beautiful. This
season. Yep. All right. Well, that is going to do it for tonight. Again, Vince, thank you. And thanks to Ryan Conley as well. And we will talk to you on Tuesday's show right after Notre Dame and Texas A&M. Hopefully after Notre Dame and Texas A&M. And they're hopefully they're not still playing.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Is going on.
Good point,
that's
right. Sir.
That's right. But we will do it then. So we will talk to you then here on IB Nation Sports Talk.